You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special post-game edition of the Talking About podcast. I'm Sean Kennedy. I'm here to discuss the Sixers' 119-100 win over San Antonio, their sixth straight victory. And joining me to talk that and more is Dan Volpone of the Gastroenteritis. Man, it's a mouthful. I messed it up. The Gastroenteritis Blues podcast. It's a little bit of a crossover episode. Dan, how you doing?
I'm great. Always feeling good after a win. So,
yeah, absolutely. Very, very good win for the Sixers tonight. They jumped out to a 20-point lead in the first quarter, scored 39 points in the opening frame. They the Spurs made a couple runs throughout the game, but it was never cut to more than like a 10-point lead. So, relatively stress-free win for the Sixers, which we can always enjoy those, can't we?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the first quarter was refreshing. Like, just to jump out like that, I feel like we haven't done that in a while. So it was really nice.
Yeah, they've even while they've been winning lately, it's been a lot of slow starts, and then they eventually turn it on in the middle of the game. And or sometimes, like in Orlando, they just let Orlando hang around, and then the last 3 minutes, they put them away. But yeah, not a whole lot of they've been up 20 and then just kind of coast for the most part, which with a double-digit lead all game. But yeah, good to see. And as usual, Joel Embiid was one of the leaders, and he's been tremendous. He was the December player of the month in the Eastern Conference, and another 31 points, 12 rebounds, 7 assist effort for Joel. Just continues to be an MVP caliber player each and every night for the Sixers right now. What jumped out to you regarding Joel's performance, Dan?
Like, it sounds weird to just say, like, it almost sounds overly simple, but, like, he just seemed like he wanted to dunk the ball every time down the floor tonight. Like, he had quite a few dunks. In a lot of situations, I think he would, in most games, kind of lay the ball up, which is fine. He's good at that. But he had a lot of big dunks. Passing kind of sustained from that Rockets game didn't really feel like that was a fluke. Like, they've been running the offense more through him, I think, the last few games, which I actually like a lot. Like, I think the last maybe few weeks kind of been just saying, Joel, you bring the ball up on the break and running the break through Joel and the way they kind of used to through Simmons. But even in the half court offense, I feel like even more than usual, everything's going through Joel. He's been getting the assists. And like I said, just when attacking the rim, you know, with eyes on getting a dunk, not picking up a foul and getting a layup. Like, I feel like I haven't seen this Joel in a while that I can remember, like just really trying to dunk everything. It was fun.
It really was. Those were definitely the two areas I noticed as well. Just he goes coast to coast at least once a game now, where he does the grab and go, and then he gets around the 3-point line, and it's a little bit Giannis like, where he just has those long strides and it's like two steps and he's at the rim and he's just throwing it down. He had the one where for some reason the Spurs were trying to switch on the fly and no one picked up Joel and he just went unimpeded down the lane for a dunk. But then the one that really impressed me was when Murray picked him up at the top of the key and Joel went one dribble to his right, did a little Euro step around him and kind of had Murray and I think it was Poeltl at the rim and just kind of dunked it in between them. And it's tremendous to watch a guy who's this fluid at his size. I don't think we've ever seen a guy his height and his weight that has this kind of agility and fluidity out there with the ball in his hands. It's really incredible to watch.
I like that you said Giannis, like, because like the one thing we know about Joel is like he's really good at watching film of guys and like picking things up, and he's, you know, nowhere near as good as Giannis is, you know, in transition. No. And, but he's gotten like markedly better, and it does look Giannis-like. So I wouldn't be that surprised if he, you know, was watching a lot of Giannis and thinking, how can I add this to my game?
Yeah, he is a savant where he'll just pick up other areas of people's games and kind of incorporate them into his, for sure. Yeah, he's not the kind of agile player that Giannis is, and Giannis isn't as bulky and everything, but he has picked up the long strides can take him pretty far on the court, and like, what can I do with that? And it's really cool to watch. And then you also mentioned the passing. He had a couple really nice finds to Matisse under the basket, who Matisse had a really nice game in his return from protocols. And I like Matisse down in that dunker spot area, because one thing Matisse does do well is kind of duck in. He has good instincts with that, and, you know, not the greatest shooter. So that's a good way to incorporate him in the half court offense in the old Ben Simmons dunker spot. And then Joel also had it was kind of like a behind the back, but kind of over the shoulder pass. Yeah. You're mimicking it for people that are listening on audio here, but yeah, it was great. And he had also just a really nice touch pass, like a 1-2 touch pass to Tobias very early in the game. It was the first minute or two where he got it and just knew where Tobias was to be right away. And just beautiful touch. Like it's incredible how far he's come, even in the last month or so, with his reads on the court. And it's like we're running out of superlatives for Joel Embiid at this point, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because, you know, he's been at an age where it's like he's about hitting his prime for a few years now. He's probably a few years into his prime, kind of where you expect guys to, you know, just get smarter, but maybe not necessarily add new things. And he keeps adding things. Like, it's like, oh, Ben's gone. Like, let me pick up some of the things Ben was really good at. Like, that's kind of what it feels like he's done. He's just like, oh, I should do this now. And he just does it. Like, it's nothing.
Yeah. Let me become the point center and lead the team in transition and go coast to coast myself, and do opposite corner passes from the post and everything else that he's really incorporated into his game. But yeah, so another great game for Joel. He's well on his way to a January Player of the Month award if he keeps this up. But not a one-man show for the Sixers tonight. They had a handful of great contributions. Another one was Seth Curry, who scored 23 points, 10 of 18 from the field, and another 7 assists for Seth, who, because Tyrese is out in protocol and Shake not playing as well, they're very limited in terms of point guards. So it's Seth, and then it's Korkmaz leading the second unit, who are kind of like the de facto points on the court. But Seth, coming off his 12 assist effort against Orlando the other night, another 7. Just his two-man game with Joel it's just a bread and butter play for them at this point. They seem to have figured out each other's little niches and have a really good feel for what they're going to do on the court. And it seems automatic whenever they run that two-man game and Seth can step in for that little jumper. I don't know. I know people find faults with Seth because he does have his limitations defensively, but if he's able to create offense like he is also, in addition to being one of the best shooters in the league that he is, like, I don't know. I feel like this is the peak part of his career right now, and the Sixers couldn't ask for anything more from him.
Oh, I totally agree. And I also think like obviously Seth was great offensively in the playoffs, and I think it's really easy to his weaknesses were, I think, especially exposed against the Hawks defensively. Whereas like the Hawks have a lot of guys who are like 6'7", 6'8", who play, you know, like Kevin Herter's their two guard, right? Like Kevin Herter's going to shoot over Seth. Not every team has a good shooter who's going to be 4 or 5 inches taller than Seth is. So I think
a lot of big wings that can also be secondary creators.
Right. I don't think that Seth is like, you know, a huge, he's not like a good defender, but I don't think he's a disaster in every series against every team. Like, I think the Hawks were just a tough matchup for Seth defensively.
Yeah. Most teams have one or two guys where you can hide Seth because it's not that he's lacking in off ball, like knowledge. Like, he knows where to be. He knows how to connect with his fellow teammate on the defensive end. And like, hey, we should switch here. Like, let's fight over the screen here. Like he's a smart guy and a smart player. Like, he knows what he's doing. He just has limitations because of his size and his lack of quickness relative to other guys his size. But yeah, usually there's one or two. The Hawks has just so many interchangeable parts that, like, oh, you're gonna put Seth on him. Well, he's another 6'8" wing that can hit 15 footers over him. So that's fine. We're gonna work with that. But yeah, usually it's fine. And then as long as you don't have any other subpar defenders on the court, you can get away with it. So yeah, I agree. I'm not as worried about it as other people are. And if he's as lights out shooting as he generally is, and also being this terrific on ball creator with these expanded opportunities lately, like, yeah, just plug him in. Like, he's having a career year. Like, anyone that wants to gripe about Seth, like, what are you doing here? Like, you're just picking nits, and you really don't need to be. One guy who we have had some reason to be down on this year is Tobias Harris, but he had another good game following up his good effort in Orlando. He had 23 points tonight against the Spurs, 9 of 12 from the field, 5 of 6 from the line. So getting the line a handful of times, that's something people always look for with Tobias, something he can improve on. 7 rebounds, 5 assists, no turnovers. Just it seemed like the Spurs didn't have the size to kind of go up against Tobias. He often found himself against one of their smaller wings, like, because of they were missing a lot of guys with COVID protocols and everything else. So they were really shorthanded. So it seemed like Tobias just found himself with smaller guys for his, hey, I have the ball 10 feet away, let me back him down a little bit and shoot over him. That seemed to work a lot more than it was in some of the past games where he was struggling. What did you see from Toby tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely part of it, but I also want to be sure, like, I want to give him proper credit because I've been very hard on Tobias. I think basically everyone's been very hard on Tobias, and I didn't particularly enjoy how he handled the Houston game. I thought he had, you know, some very, like, thoughtful things to say afterwards. And, yeah. You know, he came out today and it was basically his first home game since then. And I think, you know, my biggest criticism of Tobias as a player in general has been, like, he a lot of times feels like when you're watching, it's like he's not playing team basketball within the flow of the game. Like, he's like either being too passive or too slow to make a read, or he's forcing this, or like just kind of not making the plays that you would hope he would make a lot of times. And I felt like today he was really within the flow of the game. I mean, he had, you know, 5 assists and he only took 12 shots, which usually I'd be like, Tobias didn't take a 3. Like, what are you doing? Like, but it didn't feel like there were a lot of, like, Tobias pump fakes a 3 and dribbles into a contested 2. It was like, it felt very, you know, like you said, I mean, I think it helped that he was able to, you know, get deep on some of these smaller guys and take some of these closer shots. But it just felt like he was playing more within the team today. And I hope that maybe, you know, and he's talked about it, to be fair, he's talked about, he's not playing how he wants to play. And a lot of it is just that his shot's not going down. But I think, you know, it's more than just the shooting between this year and last year. I really think it is. And today felt like, besides the fact that he shot, you know, 9 for 12, which he was very efficient, it felt like more of last year's Tobias, where it's like, he's just fine. Like, even though he's still going to be like a slow decision maker and he's going to pump fake some threes, like, he was still felt like he was just playing more within the flow of the game and not forcing certain things that he has been. I think he's been pressing a bit. And I hope that, you know, with kind of the weird things that happened in the Houston game and, you know, his comments after, like, maybe that's kind of a reset for him. You know, maybe that's like, all right, this was, you know, this was not good. This was, you know, me kind of showing to everyone that I'm a bit in my head right now and letting things bother me that I shouldn't and that I usually wouldn't. And this is as good a time as any to take a step back and kind of like reevaluate things. And so I hope we see, and part of it, and to be fair, he's also coming back from COVID, and that could be part of it. And as he gets further from that, that should help too. But I just hope that, you know, it has seemed, and kind of he's admitted it a bit, where it's like, you know, he is frustrated, you know, he's frustrated with his play. And I hope that maybe this can be a step back for him and we're going to see Tobias, you know, maybe he won't be as good as last year. He was tremendous last year. That could have been his peak, but he could still be a good player. If he could just kind of get back to how he was playing, even if the shot isn't as high of a percentage. And like this year, I've been thinking, like, you know, Tobias is either having a bad game or he's having, like, you know, a decent to good game. And this was a very good game. This was like the best Tobias game we've seen in a while. So, you know, after the solid Orlando game too, I am feeling, you know, like hopefully we're turning a bit of a corner here and we're getting back to, you know, the Tobias we saw a bit last year.
Yeah, I don't mean to fault him for saying that. Oh, he was going against smaller guys, and that's why it worked out well. Like, if you recognize you have those matchups, that's what you should attack. Like, that's just being a smart player on the court and having a good basketball IQ and saying, this is a favorable thing for me to do. Why wouldn't I do it? And he shot 9 of 12 from the field, so it worked. That's all great. Yeah, so hopefully that just continues to build for him. He has a couple of good performances. And as you said, I think he had a very mature response after the Orlando game when he said, nobody died, they just booed me. That can go on the bulletin board for all-time great Sixers quotes. And yeah, when you see somebody like Julius Randle and his response to his thumbs down,
way worse.
That, like, the flip side of that was Tobias giving a very, very measured, mature, and sensible response in the aftermath of it. To be fair to Randall, I guess he did have an Instagram post today, which was very much like PR damage control. But yeah, Tobias handled that much better.
The funny thing with Randall is he's not the first New York athlete to give a thumbs down to the crowd this year.
Yeah.
And he must have seen how it went for the Mets players who did it. Like, very not good. Like, the owner made them apologize. Like,
yeah.
Why would you try it after that?
Javi Baez should not be your role model when it comes to player fan interactions. Yeah, just the fact, I mean, I love that Boston lost, but the fact that the Knicks came back and won also kind of overshadowed, like, how train wreckish it was looking for the Knicks while they were down 25 and Randall was getting booed and everything else. So I am happy Boston lost, but part of me was like, oh, I really wanted the Knicks to implode there. That would have been great too. But, as far as Sixers tonight, Charlie Brown got his first bucket as a Sixer, local guy, obviously from St. Joe's. Aaron Henry got his first NBA points. I don't know, from the rest of the supporting cast, anything notable to you, Dan?
Charlie Brown in the minutes he got, which was, I mean, more than I expected. He got 12 minutes.
Played in the first quarter. Like,
yeah, active defense, active hands. I knew he went to St. Joe's, but I didn't know a ton about him. Besides that, I didn't watch much of those St. Joe's teams. Always, you know, obviously.
You were watching the Charlie Brown, Taylor Funk duo?
I was not, but like, I was excited to see, you know, he's been kind of picking up on some teams with all of the, you know, the rosters with, you know, with COVID and having guys out and everything. And, you know, I knew he was a St. Joe's guy, so I've been excited to see him get a shot. And I was excited to see him get a shot on the Sixers. And I was pleasantly surprised. Like, I thought he was like, he was really active and he was fun. I don't know. I feel like we didn't get a ton from anyone else. Although I do want to say, Furkan as the, kind of like second ball handler has been really good. And, besides his shot, just, you know, if you ignore the shot, which was bad for a while,
cold really night from fun. Tonight as well. Yeah.
Yeah. But even besides that, I think, you know, part of the things we hope to see from Furkan with how he played in the preseason was like, Furkan came into the preseason and showed you a lot as like another guy who can handle the ball. And I think a lot of that, like, probably fairly got overshadowed with how poorly he was shooting the ball for a while. But he really is a guy who, when he's hot shooting, which will happen sometimes, gives you a lot on offense, like, especially with the Sixers thin at guard, can really help out there.
Yeah, his secondary parts of his game have really gotten a lot better. And the fact that we're even talking about him as like, oh, he can fill in as your backup point if you need him to, like, a few years ago, that would have been crazy to even speculate on. Yeah, he can't obviously shoot 1 of 6 from three. Like, he needs to be a little bit better on a given night, but that'll come and go. And hopefully on the whole, it'll average out to, he is a good shooter and he'll eventually hit more of them. But yeah, his secondary playmaking has gotten a lot better, and I would say he's an above average defender at this point in his career too. I think he's improved a lot in that area. So yeah, just good rotation guy that, on a great contract. So for him to be your eighth or ninth man or whatever, as long as he is not ice cold from three, like, really good asset to have. I agree with Brown as well. I thought he was really quick. He's got a good wingspan. I thought he was really active defensively. Got his hands in passing lanes and everything. He looked a little nervous. I thought just like he was looking around a lot. Like, am I sure I'm in the right place? I'm sure he had some nerves as a local guy getting his debut with the hometown team. But yeah, I thought he handled it well. That was cool that his first bucket came in the first quarter on that N1. So play stopped and everybody like was cheering on. I'm sure that'll be something he always looks back on. But yeah, I'm definitely cool if he gets some minutes on the rest of this 10-day and we kind of see further what we have in him. I thought it was great debut for him. So, all right, at this time, we're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsor. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about some stuff beyond tonight's game in Sixers land.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, and we're back. Before we're going to dive into a couple of the Ben Simmons kind of ancillary things that popped up this week. But before we do that, I have to talk with someone about the Twin Towers lineup that Doc Rivers finally unleashed against the Magic the other night. I don't know if it'll ever come back, and this is my weekly podcast, so I have to talk about it now, even though it was not the most recent game. 4 minutes of the third quarter against the Magic, it should be noted the Sixers were missing guys, and then Isaiah Joe suffered an in-game injury, so the rotation was diminished, and Doc felt this was the time to unleash Andre Drummond, Joel Embiid, and it went very well. It kind of sparked the turnaround for the team. They were trailing in that third quarter at one point, and it kind of turned the game around, and then the bench at the beginning of the fourth went on another run and really kind of took control of the game for the team. I don't know. I thought it was fun. They shouldn't whip it out in a playoff series or anything, but I wouldn't mind seeing it again this regular season. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was awesome. I mean, especially, you know, offensively, you have, you know, Joel kind of being the pseudo point guard at times. And you just kind of let him keep initiating, and you can put Drummond, you know, further down low, let kind of Embiid work the post and the foul line extended. And then, you know, defensively, I think Orlando has some guys that you can hide one of them on, and Embiid doesn't necessarily have to be under the basket all of the time. And really, I think what kills the Sixers a lot of times, especially, you know, if the Sixers are going to lose to a worse team, is like they get badly out rebounded. And with the two of them in there, that's really not a problem, especially when you still have, you know, Niang and Tobias in, and you're playing this just massive lineup. It felt like kind of the 2018 Sixers, the Raptor series Sixers, with when you are running like, you know, Embiid, Simmons, and Butler's the smallest player on the floor, and just like some of those massive lineups they would run. I agree, is probably not almost against basically any lineup the other team could put out there from a playoff team. It's not something you really want to do in a playoff series. But yeah, I thought it was a ton of fun, and if they try it for 2 minutes in the playoffs, I won't be mad. I thought it was like, I mean, the lineup was, you know, it's the Magic, whatever. It was weird, but like it was very successful for the 4 minutes he tried it. So yeah. I loved it.
Yeah, you mentioned that old Sixers lineup where Butler was the smallest guy. It wasn't just Drummond and Embiid. It was Korkmaz at the point, Tobias at the two, Niang at the three, and then Drummond and Embiid. So Niang's a guy they've tried at small ball center. Tobias should be a four probably. So you had the four playing a two, and then three guys who have been your center at various points this year. And then Korkmaz, who's the 6'7" wing, who's filling in at point guard at times. Like, yeah, just jumbo package. Like Orlando plays Carter Jr. and Bamba together. So that's definitely a lineup where you can unleash two centers. A couple other teams I thought of in the East, like Cleveland obviously has revolutionized big ball. Like if they're having Mobley and Jared Allen together with Markkanen at the three, like why can't you play that kind of lineup against them? And then another team that came to mind was the Knicks, who if you have Randall and Mitchell Robinson or whoever else, like Noel at center, like that's another a lineup that I wouldn't mind seeing Embiid and Drummond together. So it doesn't seem analytically great, like, and the most efficient way to go about playing basketball in the year 2022, but I think there are times this year where it might be prudent to like give it another look. And Embiid's skilled enough on both ends to play along the perimeter. And Drummond, for a guy his size, he does a really good job like getting low and getting his hands in passing lanes, where I feel like even though he's slow because he's a big man and he doesn't have the quickness of even an Embiid, like he does a decent enough job to like hang back, get his hands in passing lanes. He can contest well because of his length. I want to see it again. So it seems crazy, but I enjoyed it. So now it comes to the time where we unfortunately have to talk about whatever is going on in the world of Ben Simmons. There were a couple interesting reports which are Simmons adjacent this week. One was from Mark Stein, who now formerly of the New York Times, now doing his own Substack. In it, I'm going to quote it exactly here. He said, "The 76ers will be discussing various Simmons trade scenarios for the next month, but actually trading him before the NBA's annual trade buzzer is not their preferred scenario as it stands. Convincing Simmons to rejoin the team and play as much of the remaining schedule as possible, according to one source familiar with Philadelphia's thinking, is the club's goal number one when it comes to the wayward playmaker." Dan, having heard / read that earlier today, what was your first reaction?
I mean, like, no offense to Mark Stein, but my first reaction is like, there's no way, right? Like everything we hear from Woj and Shams is like, Ben is not playing for the Sixers. Like that's not going to happen. I'm sure in Daryl's ideal world, like Ben comes to play and maybe he still wants to be traded, but the Sixers can, you know, have more of a stomach to take him into the off season because he's still around and it's not like you're just kind of punting on this season. But I have a hard time believing that is where they're putting a bunch of their eggs right now. Like I think they have to be looking into trades, especially because, you know, in that piece, it's still said that the Sixers kind of view that as not likely, which then you're talking like when you, and I'm sure we'll get into some of these other rumors later, but when you see some of the guys who you might be able to get, are they really, you know, less valuable in a trade for maybe a higher tier star next in this next upcoming offseason than a Ben Simmons who hasn't played in a calendar year, right? Like, are teams really going to prefer Ben Simmons having not played in forever and having his last, you know, basketball played still being that awful series? Like, I don't know. I think that there's a real case to be made for kind of get what you can get at the deadline. And I don't really buy that they're putting so much, you know, so much of their hope into like, well, maybe Ben will just change his mind, because Ben has been pretty consistent in that he doesn't want to be here. And to be fair to him, he hasn't been dishonest about that. He's been very straightforward. He does not want to be here. So,
yeah. So I agree with everything you said. I think the two different sections of that portion of Stein's reporting that I just read are completely different. So convincing Simmons to rejoin the team being goal number one, I think is completely preposterous. You're living in a dream world if you think there's any chance that Ben Simmons is going to suit up for the Philadelphia 76ers again. So if that is in any way they're thinking, like, they just have to stop that. But on the first portion where they said not trading him before the deadline as it stands being their preferred scenario, I actually do kind of believe that, because I think that Darryl has set such a high bar for what he's willing to accept in a return that based on all, and I think he has been making the calls and everything. So I think as things stands, from what is available in his mind, his preferred scenario is to hold on to Ben Simmons and wait till the summer. So before we're going to talk about the situation with the Sacramento Kings, and we'll kind of dive into like what would happen if Ben does get traded before February, and a little bit more about the step up deals and everything you just mentioned. But keeping that reporting from Stein in mind, if that is their preferred scenario because they don't like what's on the table right now, what is your thought process, and how would you feel on February 12th or whatever, and if Ben Simmons is still, if you pull up the spot track page and his salary gap is still under the Philadelphia 76ers section?
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible to like say for sure. Obviously, I don't know what Darryl has offered. I just think that my bar is probably a lot lower than Darryl's is right now. A lot of the players who have been, you know, reported to be, you know, possibilities, I would be very okay with. I've been big on for a while now. It's like the Ben Simmons trade does not have to be the last trade you make. You know, like if you can get assets that you think are fair, understanding that, you know, Ben not playing is Ben's value going down at this point, right? Like the longer a guy sits out, it's probably true that the less a team is going to be, you know, super excited to go after him. I don't know. Like I would be extremely bummed, you know, partly because I think that, you know, Joel was off shooting to start the year. His shot is back. He looks, I mean, especially like since he's come back from COVID and the few games before COVID, has looked as good as he did last year, which is, you know, like just a guy that can be, you know, the 1A star on a championship team. And I would be really disappointed if they didn't get another guy. To just give him a chance. I understand, you know, there's also, you know, a lot of people saying, well, you know, you're not just trying to not waste this year. You're trying to not waste Joel's prime. I get all of that. I just think that, you know, this year is included in Joel's prime. I would be so hesitant to, you know, not try to win this season, especially because I think there are guys out there who might not be superstars right now, but can really help. And guys who's, and you know, we're going to get into the Kings later, so I won't say too much, but like, let's say Halliburton, for example, right? Like a guy who, you know, if he's given the opportunity to play on a Sixers team that is going to the playoffs and, you know, he's a very good shooter, the opportunity to play, you know, with Joel Embiid, a guy who takes a lot of the offensive attention, might look even better. And a guy who's really, really young and is getting better. And like his value might be what Ben's is. But what Ben's was at this point in the offseason, if you get him and he plays well. So I struggle to view it as like it's a this year or the future, right? Like I feel like there is a middle ground where you can kind of get both, understanding that Ben might not be the trade chip he once was. And especially next summer might not be the trade chip he once was. So if they take him into the offseason, I would be pretty disappointed, just because I feel like there is a way to handle this where it's not necessary to do so.
I agree. So yeah, let's talk about you mentioned Halliburton. So let's talk about the Kings report now. So a couple of days ago, earlier this week, basically Sacramento is now putting everyone on the table is the reporting. It seemed like at the beginning of the season, in the off season, Fox and Halliburton were off the table. Fox then, at some point this season, was placed on the table. It seems like Halliburton is even on the table now. You mentioned you'd be totally okay with a Halliburton trade. It seems like personally, I would be as well. You get a guy who's over 40% shooter. He's shown he has an above average ceiling on both ends. When Fox was out for portions of the season this year, he was a lead playmaker, was averaging over double digit assists for the handful of games Fox was out recently. And like, there's no area of his game that would be labeled subpar. He's at least above average in every area. He's still incredibly young at 21 years of age, good size for his position, 6'5". Like, the ceiling's incredibly high for this guy. And to your point, why would Ben Simmons, who's I don't know, 5 years older or something than Halliburton. Hasn't played basketball in a year. If you're talking about you're looking shop in the summer, and then his most recent time on the court was this huge flame out where he's now reportedly dealing with mental health issues surrounding playing the game that you're going to be paying him a lot of money to be playing. Like, why is that a preferable package to a young guy who it has shown a lot of promise on both ends? You have on a rookie deal for 2 more years after the season. Like, I feel like even if you acknowledge Ben Simmons is a better player in the moment, there's no reason to think that Halliburton wouldn't be a better player down the road, and everything else about the situation would favor a guy like Halliburton over a guy like Simmons. So yeah, get Halliburton with, like, you got to make the salaries work with like a Buddy Hield or Harrison Barnes. Like, I would do that in a heartbeat.
Oh yeah. I mean, I really like Barnes too. And to your point, I mean, with Halliburton's passing, he's averaging, you know, keeping in mind that for most of the year, he has not been their lead playmaker. He's averaging 6.8 assists. Ben, who we all agree is a, like, a good to very good passer, averaged 6.9 assists last year. So they're averaging the same number of assists, and Halliburton's playing with, you know, worse shooters around him. And he's initiating. I know an assist is not like the gold standard for, you know, creation, but he's initiating quite a bit of offense on a bad team with even, you know, being off the ball quite a bit. I think that he helps a lot. He can, I mean, like you mentioned, he can really shoot. He shot over 40% from three, both of his seasons in the league, even though it doesn't take a ton, but I mean, Seth doesn't take a ton. We agree that he's really helpful.
You know who also doesn't take a ton of threes? Ben Simmons.
Ben Simmons takes no three and makes no three. So yeah, I mean, he's just, I would love him. And you know, you kind of mentioned, and it's what I've been saying, where it's like Halliburton helps this year. And like you said, he's probably not as good as Ben right now. And he might not be as good as Ben next season. But Halliburton wants to play for your team right now if you get him. And when you go to this summer and you're trying to make a trade, you either have, you know, it doesn't matter if Halliburton's not as good as Ben yet this summer, because teams that are trading a Beal, that are trading a Lillard, yeah, or if those guys come available, it's not, you know, who's the best player can I get right now? It's who can we build around going forward? And I think there's a real argument for Halliburton, who's still on his rookie deal, who is not showing such glaring weaknesses in his game, who is, like you said, 5 years younger or four or 5 years younger than Ben, right? Like, I think a lot of teams would prefer that guy. He's a really good player. And so I don't view it as you either win this year or you can win in the future, because I think getting Halliburton still very much keeps your, you know, packages open for a real superstar if that happens to come available sometime soon.
Yeah, I agree with all that. You know why Halliburton's assist numbers are comparable to Ben's last year? Because he doesn't spend the entire fourth quarter in the dunker spot without the ball. So that helps boost your assist numbers.
Just wait till Doc gets his hands on him.
He might send Maxie back down there again. We don't know.
Yes.
But yeah, I agree. Halliburton doesn't have any glaring weaknesses in his game. His game's very scalable. Like, if you want him to play off ball and hit spot up jumpers off an Embiid post up, he can do that. If you need him to be the secondary playmaker in like a Seth role, he can do that. Or if you need him to take the Korkmaz role and be like your backup point, he can do that. Like, there's a lot of different areas where he would help your team immensely. And again, getting back to like a playoff series, yeah, he's young, so he'd have growing pains in that sense. But you throw him on a court, there's no area where I'd feel like, oh, well, we can't have Halliburton in this situation, because he doesn't have, it's not like there's, no one would be attacking him on the defensive end. He's helping your spacing on offense. And if you need him in a pinch to create offense himself, he can do that. So yeah, I agree with all that. If I'm a team in the league, I would prefer Halliburton to Simmons, just like kind of in a vacuum, just because of all the surrounding drama around Ben and, you know, who knows what's going on in his head right now about playing the game of basketball. Like, yeah, it's kind of a no-brainer for me. So the fact that the Sixers, you know, we don't know for sure, but the reports are that they're asking the sun and the moon in a Kings return package. Like, I feel like Daryl just needs to come down like to earth a little bit, be a little more realistic, and let's move on with our lives and give Joel Embiid that help that you mentioned. Like, he's having an MVP caliber season. Like, let's not just throw it away. Like, give him as much help as you can give him. within reason. So, all right. It seems like we're both on board with the Haliburton trade. So I feel good about that. And of course the Sixers are playing well right now. They've won six straight. They're shooting up in the Eastern Conference, and they're getting healthier. Everything's kind of looking up right now for Philadelphia, which we haven't been able to say at every point this season. So we should take time to acknowledge it when we can. Next up is Houston on Monday. That game is in Houston. So another good chance for a victory to make it seven straight. But until then, great talking with you, Dan. I appreciate you coming on for the crossover episode. Aside from you can plug when the Gastroenteritis Blues is going to drop next, and any info about anything upcoming on that, and where else can everybody find you?
Yeah, next pod is coming out Sunday night, probably. Might be Sunday afternoon. Depends when we're all free, but definitely by Monday at some point. And I'm not really on Twitter anymore, but I am like fully on Twitter, kind of, because I just tweet from our podcast account now. So at Gastro Blues Pod, you can find my random thoughts about the Sixers and when they make me mad and when they make me happy. That's all it is.
Well, it's definitely more happy than mad lately. Sure. So we're all very thankful for that. So Dan, thank you once again for joining. For everybody else, I'm Sean Kennedy. You can find me at Philly Fast Break, and I will catch you listeners next week for another episode of the Talking About Podcast. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, Sean. See ya.